We've talked a lot on the podcast recently about the Folger Shakespeare Library and its many scholars and scholarly activities. But one of the great things about the Folger Shakespeare Library is that it's not just all scholarship. One half of the building, or at least a third of the building, is a theater. Now today we get to talk about the theatrical side of the Folger Shakespeare Library, the Folger Shakespeare Theater. And I'm talking with artistic producer Janet Alexander Griffin, who is also a scholar in her own right. Right?
No, I'm not.
Oh, damn. I thought I had that. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 497, The Folger Theater. We have done so many podcasts recently with people associated with or connected to the Folger Shakespeare Library and the Folger Theater, but I wanted to finally talk to the person in charge of the whole theater. Janet Alexander Griffin has led the public programs of the Folger Shakespeare Library since 1982 and has been the artistic producer of the Folger Theater's programming since 1992. She was good enough to include us in the Folger's festivities surrounding William Shakespeare's 400th death anniversary this year, and I was intrigued and inspired by the relationship there between scholarship and art, which is where Janet and I began our conversation. What are the challenges of programming shows at the Folger Library, at the Folger Theater, at the Folger Shakespeare Library? Is there an attempt to shoot the cannon, you know? Does it have to be all Shakespeare?
No, I don't have to do all Shakespeare.
Good.
Though I do, of late, particularly enjoy doing some of the lesser well-known plays. But, you know, one kind of challenge or opportunity or wonderful thing about the Folger is that there are a lot of people in the audience that know a lot about Shakespeare. And we have the kind of community that they are not afraid to tell me that, which is lovely.
Yeah.
I think it's a very friendly kind of situation, and people, I think, are very generous with, you know, just wanting and enthusiastic about really discussing the plays. So there's always a lot of chat between scholars and actors and directors and audience members, and I think that's a win-win.
Well, and you have to, I know that you put together, like, you brought us in, and first of all, thank you for bringing us in, because it not only is it an honor and a thrill to have performed William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, on Shakespeare's actual birth/death day, the 400th anniversary.
Oh, I know. Wasn't that great?
It was phenomenal. But you took a pig in a poke. You didn't ask to read it. You didn't, you know, vet it in any way. It could have been really terrible.
Austin, I got a script from you.
Yeah, but that was after we were already sort of committed. I suppose at some point you could have pulled the plug and you didn't, so thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I felt as though we had this relationship from 20-odd years ago, and I'd seen a lot of your work, so I had confidence in choosing my collaborator that I could, you know, I could really rely on you doing a great show.
Well, and that's part of it, is choosing your collaborators, because not only do you program your own shows, you choose the art directors, and you've commissioned a new play from Aaron Posner called District Merchants. Aaron and Teller directed this infamous great production of Macbeth that was done in the Round. How do you go about I know it's a stupid, huge global question. How do you go about choosing what goes into a season and which artists to work with? There's only so many slots, and I'm sure you have a lot of people you want to work with.
I do, and, you know, coming up, I'm working with some new people, two new directors next season, which is really fun. This wonderful woman named Gay Taylor Upchurch and Eric Tucker, who's doing Sense and Sensibility. There are a lot of people that I look forward to working with in the future, but I really do also rely on the people that I have grown to trust. Right. And the Folger is not I think the theater itself is not a very simple place to work. You know that, perhaps. Everything is seen, and you know, the audience is really smart, and you can't lie to people. You know, you just have to produce a product that has real integrity, I think. And so,
well, and I think it, the nature of the space and the nature of the audience lends itself or requires a sort of honesty in your production. You know, we're not fooling anybody. You know, there are pillars here, and we've got to avoid them. You know, that some of those seats are obstructed view seats, and we know this.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can see the whites of their eyes, and they can see you sweat.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, I love that about this space, but I think I've been able to ferret out directors who really understand the place we're in,
yeah.
And you know, who love Shakespeare and other works, because we've done some, you know, restoration. We did wonderful production of She Stoops to Conquer. We did School for Scandal. We did this great play called The Bassett Table, except we renamed it The Gaming Table, because otherwise people would think it was, I don't know, a play about a hound.
Well, there's a poster of it in our actor digs, and for the first week I was here, I was going, what's a Bassettable?
Susanna Sintlever.
Oh, she's a playwright?
She's a playwright, and she was quite good, and she ran a theater in London, and, you know, successfully, and maybe lost to history, but we brought her back.
Oh, that's awesome. There's a sense of history, I guess, about the plays that you're doing, because even the new plays, plays have a sense of history.
I mean, I try to do plays that connect to the collection.
Yeah.
So, I do operate in sort of the period of Shakespeare before and a little bit after.
Right.
I think the latest we've gone is doing Arcadia. Because, it got up to 1820, which is a little late for the Folger collection,
right.
But, it was so very English and had a lot to do with garden design and mathematics.
Oh, and thematically rich, and for all the, and it seems like it would really speak to all the scholars that are just traipsing around the halls underfoot.
Yes, research, finding an archive, finding a letter that tells about a former period. So, I loved doing Arcadia.
And what's great about the Folger, and I think people might not think this, is that there is such a sense of humor across the board for everybody we've met at the Folger. Not only are people nice, but people are funny. And there's something about, people think academics and scholars are stuffy and serious. And maybe some of them are. But oh my gosh, there have been so many people here with a great sense of humor. I mean, well, and obviously you have a sense of humor because you let us come here.
Yeah, I mean, I think scholars are passionate about Shakespeare, and that, you know, but they don't take themselves so seriously.
And nor is there a sort of preciousness that it must be presented in such and such a way.
Yeah, we're all the time trying to get out of just looking like we live in a marble box, you know.
Right.
So, you know, you participated in Shakespeare's birthday open house.
Yeah.
And, that's one of the ways we try to, you know, kind of intrigue people and let them know that there are people inside there that are doing fun things. So, yeah.
Yeah, and yes, and however one engages with Shakespeare, that's A-OK.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the earlier, the better.
Hi, this is Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and this is the podcast for the Reduce Shakespeare Company.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This Friday, June 24th, we're performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at the People's Bank Theater in Marietta, Ohio. Then on July 7th and 8th, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. For the entire month of August, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And we have a bunch of performances all across America this fall of 2016. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Janet Alexander Griffin, the artistic producer of the Folger Theater. You mentioned getting kids, the earlier the better, involved in Shakespeare specifically, but theater generally. You must have educational programs. Did they go into the schools, or you bring students in?
Oh, absolutely. A little bit of both. I think we start in third grade. We go into the classroom, but we also invite the kids to come and do little you know, do 30-minute adaptations of Shakespeare. Not adaptations, actually. Right. Abridgments.
Your word.
So Shakespeare's language, which I don't think you're doing some of Shakespeare's language, but really Shakespeare's language. And, it's really fun to get people excited early.
Well, and I met somebody at the opening night, the opening/closing night reception the other night. It's just, I'm in sixth grade, and I'm just starting Shakespeare, and what do I do? It's really hard. I said, yeah, it is really hard, but do you like it? She said, yeah. And I said, then just keep reading it. It's like a language. It's like a musical instrument. You just keep training that muscle.
I mean, we always say that's the best thing about Shakespeare is you will never understand it all.
Yeah,
so you get to keep coming.
That's
You get to see Much Ado five times, and it'll be exciting every time.
Or in my case, Pericles a couple of times. I've now seen it twice, and I think it's a much underrated play. I love that play.
You know, there's a lot of heart in Pericles. You know, he gets kicked around the ocean, but you know, he's a laudable character.
Well, and we've been asked several times, well, what are your favorite Shakespeare plays? And Reed says, well, it's boring, but it's true. Hamlet and Midsummer are my favorite. And I've seen those two plays too many times for them to be my favorites anymore. And I feel like I don't have favorite plays. I have favorite productions. And so that's why it's fun to see these underproduced plays like a Pericles come through, because you go, oh, there's something there that we should really be paying attention to.
Yeah, you know, we did Cymbeline Fiasco. A theater came in and did Cymbeline, and people loved it.
With our friend Noah Brody.
Oh, I didn't know he was your friend, but...
He's performed with us.
Oh, great. Yeah. The clowning, I get it. And people loved that. You know, I don't know. You can carve out from some of these more difficult plays the parts that you can take in at the time.
When you... So say, if you do a Hamlet... There's got to be a reason to do Hamlet other than just it's arguably the greatest play ever, right? Is that true? I guess I'm asking. Is that true?
I mean, it is the greatest play ever.
Right. But do we need to do it just because it's the greatest play? You still have to find a director who has a passion for it, or a guy whose interpretation of the role would be great, right? You can't just program it and hope for the best, right? I guess what comes first, the play or your collaborators?
Okay, I think I did learn the last time I produced Hamlet that one should have Hamlet before one announces that you're doing Hamlet.
Right. Yes, if you're going to have a program a vehicle, you need to book a driver.
Yes, exactly. It's that kind of play.
Yeah.
We unfortunately found a lovely Hamlet. You know, Graham Hamilton, he ended up winning the Helen Hayes for that year for his role in Hamlet.
Well, he better.
But you know, it is a role that a lot of people want to play. We did a lot of auditions, and we saw a lot of terrific actors, and you still wonder, okay, can this person really bring it when the time comes?
Yeah.
You know, all about speaking verse and breath and, you know...
And feeling the feels.
Yeah. But I saw some people who I didn't know at the time and who are now very famous that, you know, they're on the TV every night, who I didn't think they could do Hamlet. But,
wow.
But in fact, they, you know, they might have been just fine. But it's an interesting thing to try to cast.
I would imagine. Can you talk a little bit about District Merchants? This is the play that's following us at the Folger. And you guys commissioned Aaron Posner to write that. It's a phenomenal piece and was very funny, and I think speaks not only to the play and the issues of the play, but adds issues of race and assimilation and speaks to audiences' feelings about the play and audiences' feelings about the characters. Was any of that part of the commission, or did you just say, Aaron, write a play?
Well, no, we talked about him writing a play around The Merchant of Venice, which I think is one of Shakespeare's plays that everybody thinks, at least, that he or she has a feeling about, and divergent feelings about.
Yes.
but we were doing America's Shakespeare in the exhibition hall, and much like the Reduced Shakespeare Company, I thought having a play, commissioning a play by an American playwright who would have something specifically to say about this this very thorny topic, you know.
Well, and there are certainly revisionists who want to say, well, The Merchant of Venice is not a comedy. It can't possibly be a comedy. Well, Hemings and Condell called it a comedy in the Folio, so it's a comedy. So it must have been funny. And what was, and I've seen productions that have been funny. In fact, I was in a production that was very, very funny. I was the Duke. I wasn't anything important. But actually, I was the Prince of Aragon. I was pretty funny as the Prince.
I don't remember a Duke.
The Duke is the one of the trial. Yeah, he's a judge at the trial. But Aaron's play, when I heard the reading of it at least, reminds me that, oh, real right, it's a romantic comedy, except it's got these really huge other issues of other and other things going on.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen very funny productions of Merchant of Venice as well, and, you know, and many times it makes the ending and what happens to Shylock, you know, even more poignant.
I agree.
And, you know, heartbreaking. I like to think in this new play of District Merchants, you know, the ending for Shylock is different, you
it
know,
is.
And I
it
like...
It feels that way, yeah.
I like that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, turns out differently. But I do think Aaron's very good at capturing sort of, you know, the pathos,
yeah,
or the, you know, the difficult moments and balancing them with real funny bits.
Oh, yeah.
And very kind of heartwarming funny bits.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm hoping that, you know, people will enjoy them, both elements.
Well, and all of this is getting back to my original terribly clumsily phrased question, which was the relationship between the art and the scholarship. Is that so? You knew that in the exhibition hall they were going to be doing America's Shakespeare. I guess in a certain way, the scholarship and the location and the fact of the Folger Shakespeare Library gives you some lovely specific parameters within which to create the art.
Yeah, I mean, the Folger, I think, you know, that's what makes us different or gives us an opportunity that other theaters don't have, is we have, you know, rare books sitting next to performance.
Yeah.
And the Folger values both ends of that spectrum, you know, from scholars to actors. And, you know, there's just not in many, very many places, if at all, any in America, you know, having to do with Shakespeare, that have both of those things going.
Yeah, under one roof.
Yeah, and yeah, really, we embrace them both. So, you know, I'm delighted when scholars tell me, you know, something about a play, you know, oh, Twelfth Night, you got that way wrong. it's not nearly that sunny, which has happened. And there's a lot of interest to seeing by scholars, seeing how the plays hit the audience.
Yeah.
Sort of watching what they take in, what they understand, what they're looking at when,
yeah,
they're listening to the language. So that's really interesting.
Well, and it's a testament to the fact that the plays are meant to be performed, not read, right?
That's what they say in the long-lost first play.
that's what Shakespeare himself said, in fact. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your underrated plays via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, controversial moneylender Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Paulette Lincoln Baker. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cynthia Ryder, the executive director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1491st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Thank you again for having us, and thank you for submitting to this onslaught of questioning.
It's been a pleasure.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.